This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit with 94-year-old Eddie Fail, whose home base is in the Florida Keys, but spends several months a year with his children in Ohio and California. I want to thank his son and daughter-in-law, Jim and Jan Fail, as well as K.O. Crosby, for letting me know about Mr. Fail and his amazing story. I'm not sure we're going to do it justice here, but we'll do our best. And let me read this to you. The President of the United States of America takes pleasure in presenting the Navy Cross to Lieutenant Junior Grade Eddie L. Fail, United States Naval Reserve, for extraordinary heroism in operations against the enemy while serving as pilot of a carrier-based Navy torpedo plane in Torpedo Squadron 8, VT-8, attached to the USS Saratoga, CV-3, during action against enemy Japanese forces in the Solomon Islands campaign on 24 August 1942. Participating in an unsupported aerial torpedo raid against a Japanese task force, Lieutenant Junior Grade Fail, pressing home his attack through a bursting hail of fire from hostile anti-aircraft batteries and fighter planes, contributed to the relentless fighting spirit and aggressive courage which enabled his group to score one certain hit and two estimated hits on an enemy cruiser. His courageous fighting spirit and fearless devotion to duty, maintained with utter disregard for his own personal safety, aided greatly in the defeat of the task force and were in keeping with the highest traditions of the United States Naval Service. The Navy Cross, second in the order of precedence to the Medal of Honor. And as we heard, after inflicting that damage on the enemy, but taking stock of the damage to his own plane and running out of fuel, he found the smallest island he could spot with deep enough water offshore to allow his TBF to sink and not be spotted, and he safely made it ashore with the other three men aboard. Let's pick things up there on the tiny island of Nura, just east of Guadalcanal.
So you are on this island. You're hiding under a raft until you figure out, okay, I guess we can take a chance now. What did you guys do? How did you survive?
Fish on the reef. We ate a lot of morels.
How do those taste?
Pretty good.
Especially in those circumstances.
Yeah. No, they don't taste bad at all. We fish morels because we didn't have any fishing gear. Morels, all you need is a stick. You shove the stick in the hole, the morel clamps down, one let go, and you pull it out, the heel comes with it, and you club it to death.
Did you at any point encounter inhabitants of the island?
Any what?
Inhabitants of the island? Any other people?
No.
Never saw another soul.
I told you, I was picking the smallest island. The island was maybe 100 feet wide at the thickest point and probably 2 football feet long.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of coconuts, coconut trees anyway. A lot of land crabs. We couldn't figure out how to eat those. It was too small anyway.
I'm just trying to imagine myself in your shoes. And I realize we've all watched Gilligan's Island, or maybe we've seen Lost or Survivor of one of these shows. But at some point, there's got to be some uncertainty in your mind. How long are we going to be here? How are we going to get off of this thing? It's not like you can fire your plane back up and fly it somewhere.
As I remember it, we were figuring if we stay long enough, we're going to start diving for pearls. Probably could have made Guadalcanal if I tried to stretch it. But, I mean, there was that island. It's small, couldn't be that many Japs on it. Ideal place to crash.
So you could have just kept going, landed at Henderson Field, and you wouldn't
have
this story to tell.
I don't know if we would have made, because, as I say, I had only one gas tank, and I'd been flying on it ever since I left the cruiser. So, you know. I mean, I'm here. I know I can make that little island.
Have you ever thought about going back to that island?
Yeah. I was going to go down on my ship.
Well, you spent 20 years sailing around the world. You thought about going there, huh?
Yeah.
That TBF's probably still there.
I was thinking about diving for the TBF.
Well, what are you waiting for?
I'm getting too old for it.
Well, let's get back to these 2 weeks on the island, because this is, you know, a scenario that I think so many people have considered. I mean, that's isn't that the start of a lot of jokes or a lot of, you know, thought-provoking questions? You're stranded on a deserted island. What do you do to survive?
Oh, that's no problem.
Did you ever have to encourage any of the other guys? Were there any?
No.
Everyone just was carefree, enjoying the vacation, huh?
We had a routine. We would shoot some coconut. We still had some ammunition. As a matter of fact, my gunner took the 50 caliber machine gun, the Stinger, out of the plane and carried it with him. So we had some ammunition.
And you would shoot the coconuts out of the tree? Because the only guy who could climb in had been hurt in the crash, huh? So you'd waste your ammunition shooting coconuts down, huh?
Well, you try to break the stem.
Uh-huh. How many shots would that take?
Not too many. Well, a fairly good shot.
I'm sure everybody's saying, well, how did he get off of there? How were you rescued?
Well, we had a routine to take the raft out, put it on the beach every night to collect the water. Incidentally, that's drinking water coming out of life raft stinks.
A little rubbery, plastic?
Yeah. But anyway, one particular morning, we went out to pick up the life raft, and we see a plane coming straight at us. I forgot what kind of a plane it was, but from the front, that thing looked like a Zero. And we all scrambled back for cover. And as it comes up, we see the star. We rush out and wave. And so he sent the word out, and the USS Gamble picked us up either the same day or the next morning. Left the safety of the island to go on the Gamble.
Now you're a target. You were pretty safe there where no one
knew
you were.
Well, no, the thing is, the Gamble was an old minesweeper, converted into a minesweeper. It was a four-stacker back from World War I. I don't think they had any gun that could elevate over 30 degrees. And every night, the Jap would come down the slot. You could see the Japanese ship swim right back. It was a little more scary than the island, let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm. You don't seem like an overly sentimental person, but was it still a pretty glorious moment when they came and picked you up from that island?
Yeah. We could give up pearl diving for a while.
Did you ever find any pearls?
No.
Another reason to go back.
Yeah.
Dive for some pearls and that TBF. Something tells me if you were gone that long that the members of your squadron might have suspected that you had died.
No, I was reported dead. And I still think that's why I got the Navy course.
It wasn't just damaging that Japanese ship and shooting down a Japanese airplane and bringing all four of you guys safely just because you survived. And I've got to say, I'm sure everyone at home just reacted when you said, well, yeah, I was reported dead, as if that's no big deal.
Oh, I was reported dead twice. Once, Pearl Harbor. It's the only time I ever wrote to my mother. When I was gone during the war. I'm not much of a letter writer, but I couldn't pass that up. I sent her a letter after the Battle of Midway. She was, I'm still there.
So you were reported dead there because they just took the squadron roster?
What?
And they assumed you had died.
Well, I'm still reported. There's a picture of me in Life magazine.
Oh, a picture of the whole squadron?
Yeah, the whole squadron. You have that on record?
I'm sure I can find it. So that's
reported dead. You know, I mean, there's this Life magazine. My mother looking out.
And did I hear that you went to the Smithsonian and looked at it there?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me the story.
I said, that's a lie. I'm still alive.
So you're at the Smithsonian. There's a photo of Torpedo Squadron 8, and it says George Gay is the sole survivor, and it lists the names of the rest of you?
Yeah.
And your name is on there?
Yeah.
And you tell one of their employees that's a lie?
Yeah. I say, that's a lie. I'm still alive. And as I remember, he kind of looked at me and laughed. Yeah.
And I think we can all imagine how surreal that moment would be. I should note that you kept flying in the Pacific with the Cactus Air Force in and around Guadalcanal until you came back to the States in September of 1943. You didn't know how long it was going to last, but the war would rage on for two more years, and you were carrying out some pretty interesting work stateside.
When I got back to the States, I was assigned to Patuxent River Naval Test Center. And one of the first thing that you had to do when you get back there, in case you get assigned to a particular job, you have to check out on all the planes that they were flying at the time. So I got a chance to fly the Zero, the Messerschmitt.
This was in Maryland, testing captured enemy aircraft, but also American aircraft.
Oh, yeah. I had an engineer that was assigned. We were working as a team. The idea was I'd fly the plane and take readings on it. I mean, you know, gas consumption, this kind of thing. And his job was to write the handbook for it.
And I can tell you enjoyed that work, and that had to be fascinating. I'm sure there aren't too many people who have flown a Zero, a ME-109, plus all those American planes, and you're one of them. Was there any part of you that was itching to get back over there and fight the enemy more, or were you content with what Uncle Sam thought you should be doing?
I wasn't particularly anxious to go back in combat. I was doing interesting work down there. Of course, by the time I ended up instructing for 2 years, never instructed American cadet. After I left the test center, I went to instructor school, then to Bunker Hill in Indiana, where I met my first wife, instructed British cadets. Then they realized I could speak French and sent me to Memphis to instruct French cadets.
I'm just soaking it all in, and I know you lived it, and you've probably told this story a few times. It might not seem that remarkable to you, but when I think about, in the first place, just the fact that you're here because of your father being overseas in World War I, would have never been born, that you come to this country, you serve in our military, you hurt yourself stealing pineapples so you don't go on a mission that kills all but one man. That's pretty remarkable. Then you survive a mission where you're shot down, easily could have died, 2 weeks stranded on an island. You get rescued, all of that. And I'm sure there's 5 or 10 other things that happen to you that just are pretty hard to imagine, pretty hard to fathom. How do you account for all that?
I never thought much about it.
It sure seems like someone wanted you to survive so you could be day trading at age 94.
I suppose, yeah. It hasn't made a religious man out of me, though.
Not yet. The other thing I like to ask every veteran, because so many of the people who listen to this weren't alive in World War II. Maybe someone's hearing about the Doolittle Raid for the first time, or Ensign Gay for the first time.
Oh, I'm sure a lot of them. Some of them will hear about World War II for the first time.
Well, in light of that, what should they understand? What do you think is important to remember about what happened then?
I've studied a little American history. I somehow don't think they make people like that anymore. People get slack, sloppy, and don't strive as much.
Are you saying that's what you see in America today?
Mm-hmm. Oh, not only in America.
Sure.
I think you'll certainly see it in Europe.
Is that because we've forgotten that so many gave their lives so it didn't have to be that way?
Yeah, you forget very easily.
I don't think you've forgotten.
I hope not.
Well, I just want to make sure that I say thank you for serving our country. And thank you for telling us that story that only you could tell. Is there anything else that you think we really need to know?
Probably a lot.
As someone who's been there, if any of us end up stranded on an island with barely anything else there, what's the most important piece of advice you have?
Still alive.
Well, you had it down then, and it still seems to be working at age 94. Eddie Fail, or Frenchie, as he was known to his fellow members of Torpedo Squadron 8. You'll find photos on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, as well as hometownheroesradio.com, where I also have some links to other relevant information. What a story we heard today. You never know what you're going to hear on Hometown Heroes. Hoping you'll join us again next time, I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.